Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Welcome to Raising Good Humans. This is a bonus episode sponsored by Mustela. Mustela, if you remember, is an awesome skincare line that has really great products using safe, effective, and vetted ingredients to address each skin need your baby has. Research shows that baby's skin is still developing from 0 to 2 years and requires special care. And babies experience common skin conditions such as diaper rash, cradle cap, baby acne, and eczema. So it's important to look for products that are safe and effective. And now to this episode with Dr. Sheila McGinnis. She is a double board certified dermatologist and pediatric dermatologist. She has a very busy practice in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and she serves as the president of the Society for Pediatric Dermatology. So she's just answering questions all related to common skin conditions that we hear about or think about or observe with our children from birth through adolescence. As a pediatric dermatologist, what do parents need to know? This is like, it's one of those things where you don't really think about what information you need until you have to figure out how to interpret something, whether it's addressing a birthmark that could turn into something that you're nervous about or sunblock. I just feel like there are just so many questions that we have, but we don't really know that we're going to have them until something goes wrong, if that makes sense.
I totally agree. And one of the things that I want parents to know, Aliza, is that pediatric dermatology even exists as a subspecialty. Because I think so often, you know, families and even our colleagues and peers don't realize that pediatric dermatology exists. We're a board certified subspecialty of dermatology. We do extra training after a full derm residency to learn how skin disease shows up in babies, kids, and teens and young adults. And it's, you know, it's definitely deserved of fellowship training. And we learn how to do procedures on children like laser or excision, et cetera. So first things first is that we exist as a subspecialty and we're here to help. And number two about pediatric dermatology is that parents need to know that, you know, the skin actually isn't quite mature until age two. You know, baby skin is really different. And so there are different skincare needs and different situations and conditions that come up based on different ages of children.
So can you actually walk us through infant skin and then kind of developmental skin information? Like, I know that sounds wild, but if somebody were to ask me as a developmental psychologist about something, I like to think of it from infancy through adolescence. What are the specific things that we need to know as the skin changes? Because this is so niche and it's so interesting, but it's also that way you're prepared when something comes up. You're also prepared to better protect that skin so that we're doing the same things that we would do for the skin as we would do for any other growth and development.
Yeah, great, great point. So obviously infant skin is rapidly changing. You know, you're born and you were in an aqueous environment and now you have to rapidly adapt to, you know, being out in the world. And a few things about newborn skin is that it is actually a lot thinner than adult skin, and it takes a good 2 years for the skin barrier to really mature. It also has lower lipid content, especially on the face and in specific areas. Different lipids and proteins are expressed at a different rate. And so between being thinner and a little bit more sensitive, babies are definitely at risk for more irritation and, you know, from different things that we're putting on them, they're prone to irritation, prone to dryness. And because babies have a higher body surface area to weight ratio, and because their skin is thinner, they're actually more prone to absorbing different ingredients or chemicals that we might be putting on their skin. So those are three really important considerations. You know, a baby's skin is thinner. It tends to be a little more sensitive, a little more prone to dryness, and it's more permeable than adult skin. And that really kind of shapes how we want to be caring for skin in the newborn and infant period.
So what do you think is the most important thing? Like you see people with infants sort of covering them completely in the sun, or how should a new parent treat that skin to protect that skin from the sun versus like not getting nervous about putting protection on later? And are there any particular ingredients to look out for?
So sun protection is a whole other topic. And you're right. And I definitely want to get there. But can we first start with bathing? Because I think that's a really common place that parents start off with. And in terms of questions that they have, and, you know, bathing practices vary widely, and not only just from, you know, what we do here, but culturally, there are a lot of different bathing practices. And, you know, a lot of moms will come into my clinic, Aliza, and they have been, you know, taught or told or somehow thought that they really should avoid bathing the baby, that they should wait or only bathe the baby once a week or even once every other week. And then, you know, the baby ends up having a lot of irritation from drooling or, you know, milk in the skin folds, or they start to show signs of baby acne. And so one thing I'd love to share with parents is it is okay and recommended to bathe your baby. And the best way to bathe a newborn is actually in the bathtub, in an immersion tub bath, and gently, you know, kind of submerging the infant in lukewarm water. It's great for temperature regulation. And then you don't need soap every time. In fact, there's really great reasons not to use a harsh, foamy cleanser every time, but a gentle, non-soap, you know, synthetic detergent, hypoallergenic cleanser can be used very safely. And then after bathing, it's recommended and a great practice to get into to put a moisturizer on the baby. And that's also a nice way for parents to bond in that newborn period, you know, that kind of massage and stroking and massaging a little bit of an oil or a moisturizer into the skin. But not all moisturizers are created equally. So it's really important for parents to understand that keeping things really simple in the newborn period is best for the baby. When you are looking for, say, a cleanser or a moisturizer for your newborn, the best you can do is be a good label reader and look for things that are fragrance and essential oil free, hypoallergenic. Those are the best things that we can do in terms of choosing a product that's really safe, because infant skin, being thinner and more permeable, might be more prone to developing an allergic or irritant contact reaction to something we put on their skin, like a fragrance.
That's such a strange question, but if you don't have access to something like moisturizer or something, or even diaper cream, do you actually need it? Or are you better off using something that isn't as well made? Or are you better off just letting the body do its thing until you can get access to something that you think is high quality?
That's a great question. I think that if you bathe your baby really frequently with a really harsh foamy soap, you can definitely get a little bit of dryness and irritation. So in the case where you don't, or you might not have access to a good quality moisturizer or a good fragrance-free hypoallergenic baby cleanser, it would be okay to delay the bathing a little bit, but certainly not for weeks at a time.
What's the minimum amount of bathing you could do if your baby's just like, this is not for me, this gig?
You know, I usually will recommend every other day bath, but I think twice a week is probably sufficient for most babies. If a baby is starting to show signs that they're prone to eczema or atopic dermatitis, that usually starts to kind of show its face around 3 months of age. Then clinical studies have actually shown that more frequent bathing and application of a bland moisturizer, like we talked about, fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, to lock in the water after the baby bathes is protective and helps maybe even prevent against the development of the signs and symptoms of eczema.
So moving on to older, you know, toddlers and preschoolers, what do we need to know about skin at that age?
So I think that the skin is still in the process of maturing. Like even teens and tweens, their skin's still not fully mature. So I think some of the same principles in terms of general best practices for skincare apply, like keeping things simple, gentle, fragrance-free, hypoallergenic. But at these stages, you can actually introduce a shampoo, for example. A lot of babies will and parents will use the same baby cleanser as a shampoo. But around 2 or 3 and in earlier in school age kids, you can start to use a shampoo and conditioner. Not every day, that's not necessary, a couple of times a week. In children who are prone to dryness and sensitivity or prone to eczema, it's still a good idea to do a good bland moisturizer after bathing. It's what we like to call the soak and smear. It kind of, you know, the bathing to get the water into the skin, into that top layer, the stratum corneum, and then to use a good bland emollient right after to lock in the water and help to repair the skin barrier and maintain the pH balance of the skin barrier. And you had actually mentioned sun protection before too. So it's a great opportunity to talk a little bit about sun protection. And I always like to start this conversation with parents by saying sun protection is so much more for babies and young children than just wearing a sunscreen. We have to remember that we can use protective clothing and hats and seek shade and, you know, rely on looking at the UV index on your phone, on the weather app. And if the UV index is greater than 3, then you and your baby need full protection from the sun. And then for babies and toddlers, a sunscreen can then be used on exposed areas like the backs of hands, the face, the ears, the back of the neck. But that whole approach to sun protection in early childhood years, I think it's a big conversation and it's not just about the sunscreen.
That's so interesting. You know, as a person who lives in California with teenagers, I have not looked at the UV index. I just am like, okay, so moving on to school age, I'm curious and really, it's so funny because I'm trying to think about the different pain points with skin as development happens. And the thing that I can think of that I notice first is sort of the onset of changing skin, but I'm curious what you get coming at you for the typical child in the school age era.
Well, for me, I would tell you that a good chunk of my clinical practice is eczema. So, you know, eczema occurs in about 10% of children. So a lot of the times the skin issues that I'm dealing with in that school age child is really eczema, atopic dermatitis. And then any skin condition that affects adults can occur in childhood. It may just look a little different. Things like psoriasis, all of those different inflammatory skin conditions can come up. Luckily, it's a little less common in children, the more severe things. But of course, as a pediatric dermatologist, I get to see all of the rare and more extreme types of skin conditions, like the autoimmune blistering conditions, etc. But listen, the vast majority of children don't end up with significant skin disease in the school age years, unless they have, you know, a predisposition or eczema. The school age years, a lot of times, people will ask me, well, what should I be looking for that could be worrisome, that could be a sign that I need to take my child in to see their pediatrician or a dermatologist? And I'm talking around, you know, 4 years old to just about 8 years old. Mid-childhood is a time when children should not have acne. And so if you see acne developing during that period of time in mid-childhood between the ages of 4 and 8, it actually could be a sign of early puberty and does need to be investigated. And so if you see little blackheads on the nose or the cheeks or the ear in mid-childhood, that is a concern for early puberty and should, you know, end up seeing your pediatrician or your dermatologist and try to go further and make sure that there's nothing else hormonal going on.
Okay, so that's actually really important to know when you start seeing those things. And is there anything in terms of hygiene that we can do to encourage our kids to use when those things start creeping up?
Do you mean like with actual kind of puberty onset or early puberty?
Yes,
like
mean,
in those tween
years?
That
moves us, I think like it moves us right into the tween years either way.
Yes, it really does. So I think that this puberty onset is now, you know, around age 9 or 10 for girls and boys. And that's the time that you can start to get a little bit of that body odor, that, you know, all the hormonal changes that are happening with like adrenarche. And you can start to see little blackheads or whiteheads, and you might see them in the same distribution on the back of the nose, on the cheeks, and in the ears. And sometimes in mid-childhood, the parents kind of have less control over the bathing. In infancy and in childhood, parents are doing that bathing on a regular basis. But then, boy, in mid-childhood, whoa, life gets busy and the kids are active and doing things and also gaining more independence over their self-care. And sometimes that means in mid-childhood, they're not bathing as often as maybe you would like. And then in the tween years, when those hormones start to change and we have the onset of puberty, that's a great time to really start to set the scene for really good hygiene habits. And so again, here, taking a shower, washing your face, just going through the very basics and using it as an opportunity to, you know, really chat with your teen about what it looks like to take good care of their skin, to keep their body healthy, and to establish really good hygiene habits at that age of like 9 or 10. I think that's the perfect age to start.
And when do you know that there's like a bigger issue than just kind of good hygiene?
Well, certainly acne can start around age 9 or 10, showing up as blackheads. And then, you know, there can be the development of more concerning type of acne, inflammatory acne, where you get little pimples, papules, and pustules on the cheeks and the forehead, and even on the chest and back. And I would say that if you're a parent and you see your teen is starting to struggle with more severe acne, that is inflammatory, that has a lot of pustules, if you're noticing any early scarring or little pits occurring in the skin, that is a sign that more care is needed and just basic hygiene at home may not be cutting it. So that would be a time to see the pediatrician, to go to the dermatologist, especially if you see a lot of inflammatory acne or early scarring. Most children will get some type of acne. 90% of kids will get kind of run-of-the-mill teenage acne. They'll get some blackheads and whiteheads, but it doesn't end up being super inflammatory or severe. And even then, as parents, aren't we feeling like, oh, we want to give our kids the tools they need to really take good care of themselves? And what does that look like? And I think in these years, getting your child to just do the basics can even sometimes be tough. But that first basic step, and even studies will show that just the act of washing your face twice a day as a teen will help improve your skin. It will take off the dead skin, bacteria, and debris. It will help with the clarity. So just that basic washing the face with a gentle cleanser twice a day is a great first step for that kind of tween and, you know, early teen age group.
I'm curious what you hear about when there are questions that you think go to pediatricians that should be more specialized and come your way.
Because access in, you know, to dermatology can be limited, a lot of the times our patients and, you know, they're going to the pediatrician or their primary care doctor before they see us. And so that's a really common thing because direct access to derm in this country is actually kind of limited. And for pediatric dermatology, Aliza, it's even smaller. You know, there's only about 400 or so of us in the entire country. So a lot of times the pediatricians are doing an excellent job, like being on the front line and kind of filtering through what needs to come and what they can manage. And most pediatricians feel confident I think managing, you know, the basic kind of new onset early acne, but pediatricians will refer when the acne is also getting extremely inflammatory and starting to scar, because certainly then we need to increase the treatment ladder.
Great. Okay. What are things that might influence skin that have nothing to do with what you think it does? And what I'm thinking of specifically is, like, when is there maybe a clue that there are allergies or something going on that require a deeper look?
Great question. So, you know, allergy, I think, is it's such a huge topic, and it's super confusing, because when most people are thinking about allergy, they're thinking about a food allergy. And a food allergy is a type 1 hypersensitivity mediated reaction to a food that results in, you know, kind of immediate symptoms. Within an hour, you might feel sick, the child might vomit, there could be hives starting to show up on the skin. And that kind of immediate type of hypersensitivity reaction is what we think of with a food allergy. And then there are skin allergies, and those are contact allergies, contact dermatitis. Contact dermatitis is different than a type 1, you know, immediate reaction. It's actually a type 4 delayed reaction in the skin. And so the cause of type 1 allergies and type 4 allergies are very different. So what's causing a contact dermatitis in the skin is not the same thing as what causes a immediate reaction, like a protein that you ingest that you may have a risk for anaphylaxis. So I think people get these two concepts really confused. And in the setting of allergic diseases, where you're always kind of prone to both at the same time, it gets really tricky to kind of unravel what might be the issue. So if you want to take an example, let's take diaper rash, or we could even, you know, use eczema as our example. So, you know, when I see a child who has eczema, oftentimes they are more prone to developing a food allergy that's well known, or they may already have a food allergy, but the food itself is not causing the eczema that's coming out on their skin. And it's an important concept, and I think, again, can be really tricky. So we've learned a lot about eczema or atopic dermatitis over the past, you know, 10 to 15 years. And what we've learned is that eczema is primarily a skin barrier defect. It's not caused by something inside coming out, but rather a structural problem with your skin barrier. There's a protein that is either missing or deficient in the vast majority of patients who have atopic dermatitis. And because of that missing protein, people with eczema are not able to hold the water in their skin as easily as if they had, you know, a full amount of this protein. So that leads to kind of like this concept of a leaky skin barrier. They're losing water from the surface all the time. That feels itchy. They're scratching, which leads to inflammation. And then because of, you know, the skin barrier defect and the inflammation, you get bacteria kind of coming and playing a role on the skin as well. Too much bacterial colonization. And all of that activity has a lot of downstream effect and causes, you know, inflammation. So it's important for me when I'm talking to families about eczema to really kind of paint this picture of your child has a skin barrier problem, and the skin barrier problem is not caused by a food. However, your child is more likely to develop a food allergy over time because they have a skin barrier defect. And the example I like to use to illustrate this is, you know, say you're a busy mom, you are making a peanut butter sandwich, and you might forget to wash your hands. So now you have a little peanut protein on your hand, and you go and you give your child a big hug, you touch your child, but your child has, you know, a tendency for eczema, their skin barrier is not perfect. And now you've got peanut protein on the surface of the skin of your child. And unfortunately, cutaneous sensitization from allergens is the reason that people go on to develop those type 1 food hypersensitivity allergies. And we really learned a lot about that when we looked at the peanut studies, you know, the LEAP studies for peanut. And what we learned was that delaying the introduction of these highly allergenic foods like peanut actually leads to more peanut allergy, because the way we teach our immune system how to tolerate a food or a highly allergenic protein is through the gut by eating it. So when we teach our immune system through the gut to tolerate the food, that early food introduction, which now the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that we start these food introductions at 4 months of age, that is really how we protect against the development of food allergies. So a lot of parents, you know, are very confused, and boy, don't I wish it was just as simple as, you know, yes, your child's eczema is caused by a food, just cut this out. But the vast majority of the time, avoiding a food that is suspected is not going to help with the eczema. And certainly in the infancy period can sometimes end up leading to the development of more allergies if we restrict that early exposure.
Okay. So I think that, can you tell me what is considered skin and dermatology? Like, what parts of the body is it surprising it's considered dermatology? Because I have found that there have been things that have, issues that have come up where I would not have known that that was dermatology. And so I know that's bizarre, but there seems to be some things that, you know, certain rashes or certain things that occur that are very much dermatology. So I almost just want a definition in closing of what is under the umbrella of dermatology.
So a board certified dermatologist and pediatric dermatologists are, you know, trained in the diagnosis and management of conditions that affect the skin, the hair, and the nails. So all three are really under that umbrella. And I also think that the mucous membranes constitute a little bit, you know, they're in our wheelhouse too, because, you know, mucous membrane skin, lips, you know, other areas, you know, genital skin, that's all under, you know, that's all considered skin. So anything that occurs on those sites is really the purview of a dermatologist or a pediatric dermatologist.
Got it. Thank you. So everybody can know that. But if you don't have access to a pediatric dermatologist and you have a question for a pediatric dermatologist, what's your best next move?
So the Society for Pediatric Dermatology has been doing an excellent job trying to raise visibility for our subspecialty and actually provide great resources for parents. So you can actually find a pediatric dermatologist near you using their website, which is www.pedsderm.net. There's a finder in there where you can put in a zip code and come up with someone that's near to you. Otherwise, going through your local dermatologist or pediatrician to help get a referral to one of us if you feel like you need that special expert care for skin disease in children. Those are all great ways to access pediatric dermatology as a specialty. And on our website, lots of educational resources, handouts, videos on all different common skin conditions. That's where a lot of it is living.
You don't know until it's actually something that you need. We will put in the show notes all of the information in case anybody has questions so that you don't have to feel so confused and alone when those moments come up. Thank you so much.
Of course.
So visit mustellausa.com and use the code HUMANS at checkout for 15% off your first order. That's mustellausa.com and use the code HUMANS at checkout for 15% off your first order.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.